Good morning, everyone. My name is Jamie Veitch. I'm Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise presenter for our weekly programme, Business Live, which broadcasts every Friday morning here on Sheffield Live. Now, normally the programme is broadcast live, but today's programme is a special pre-recorded session, which we've done as part of the MADE Festival of Entrepreneurship. Now, regular listeners to the programme will know that last week, on Friday the 11th of November, we heard some interviews with speakers at the MADE Festival. And this programme continues that, because we got together a fantastic panel of really, really interesting business leaders to talk about the topic of employee engagement. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our panel and start to ask them some questions. So first of all, we have Anne Wilson. Anne's the Managing Director of Newmill Engineering. She was awarded the MBE for her services to the engineering industry and in recognition of her commitment to training and to developing her employees. She started at Newmill as a bookkeeper in 2000 before leading a buyout of the business in 2006, saving it from the recession and significantly developing overseas exports. We also have Marie Cooper. Marie was winner of Business Person of the Year at the 2015 Sheffield Business Awards. She's a former finance director at President Engineering Group, which was formed after an MBO in 2010. And Marie became plant manager after the sale of the business to Parker Hannifin last year. The business, of course, has won numerous awards, including the Queen's Award for International Trade. And it secured three awards at the Sheffield Business Awards in 2015. With judges particularly praising Marie for her leadership skills. Also on the panel, I'm delighted that we have Julie Hawley. Julie is the MD of Office Friendly Solutions, and Julie has said how much time the business spends in creating an enjoyable work culture, something I'm really, really interested in. And of course, in 2015, last year, Office Friendly Solutions won the People Development Award at the Sheffield Business Awards. And you pass on a lot of your learning for others to benefit from as well. So I'm hoping that we can benefit from some of that today too. And we're also joined today on the panel by Neil Lodeman, who's director at Evolved Workplace. And Neil has a successful track record of delivering engagement, change and leadership projects in the HR arena within food manufacturing. So he's held senior and director level positions, most recently with Kettle Foods, where, and whilst there, he introduced the idea of culture, the use of culture and employee engagement surveys as a diagnostic tools. I'm interested in how you then use the results of those surveys to inform your HR strategy and help support the vision, the values and the mission of the company. And we'll hear more about that from Neil as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, your panel. So my first question to the panel, before we focus on each panel member individually and ask for some of their particular insights, I have a question for all the panel to answer. We'll take brief answers of a couple of minutes from each panel member. And it is, of course, a question that Peter Lodeman has asked at the start of today's session. Peter mentioned that you've been talking with plenty of organisations and people really that get the idea of empowering teams, and they understand the benefits of doing so, and the financial benefits are significant, as you've described. What the problem is that companies aren't necessarily dedicating enough time to it. Now, why is that? Panel, I'd like your insights, and I'm going to start with Anne.
I think my team is a relatively small team, so it is probably easier if you are that way inclined to be more empathetic, that you are close to your team. Decision-making processes are a lot swifter because I might have a strategic path that I want to follow, but that could probably change from me walking to the bottom of the factory to the top when somebody stops me and says, I don't think that'll work, or could I just say this? So we have that quicker response in a smaller company. And I think it's important to engage with your people and understand what's happening with them and potentially in their lives that might be affecting their ability to work or the concentration. Not necessarily to get bogged down into intricacies of personal problems, but to understand what might be affecting that person and their ability to give you 100%.
Okay, thanks for that, Anne. That's really interesting. And Julie, can I turn to you with regards to that as well?
We're also a small company of 20 people. I agree there with Anne that it's easier when it's a smaller company to keep in touch with everybody. We also advise another 170 SMEs as well. What our background is in the office products industry, and a lot of them are family-run businesses, but there are also some bigger companies as well. A lot of what we learn, we do actually pass out to them, so it's a communication of what we've learned internally that we can actually pass on to them. The small team that we've got, some are out on the road, some are actually office-based, and actually keeping the communication up between the ones on the road to the office space is really important too. Spending time understanding the processes and the procedures and what we're trying to aim for, I think, has to come from the very top to show the culture that we're trying to achieve and set out is for everybody to contribute to. So the message gets filtered down, but also the feedback up, so that if anything goes particularly wrong or anybody needs any help, then everybody knows it's a flag waver for people to get involved. And you know, it is more like a family environment at work and the culture that we're trying to set up.
So that's really interesting in terms of culture, and we're going to continue to talk about that as well during the course of this session. And thanks for that, Julie. Can I turn that to you, Marie?
I think one of the problems with workplaces trying to deal with their employees and empower their employees and get the buy-in to do different things is because the seat has been the woolly round of the edges stuff. You know, people get paid to do a job. They should be expected to come to work and do the job they're paid to do. And, you know, rather than it just being as black and white as that, people see that as being there's other things important to do in the day. You know, we need to be worrying about profit. We need to be worrying about where our sales are coming from. And they forget that actually, you know, a little bit of compassion, a little bit of empathy with an employee actually makes that go a long way. And I think, you know, rather than being so involved in the actual business, is to look at the bigger picture. And, you know, I totally agree with what, you know, you've just been said about it has to come from the top. You know, you can't do this on your own. Even a small organisation, you need everybody to buy into what you're doing. Bigger organisations, you need to actually have your leadership team to buy into what you're doing, and then they need to keep cascading it down. So to me, it's all about actually saying, this is the right thing for the business. Your employees are the key to your business, and it's recognising that that is what you've got to do, and then getting some quick wins, really.
So it's that recognition, and it's got to come from the leaders as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. And again, more on that to come then. Thanks very much for that. And we'll turn then to Neil to answer the same question.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo to a large extent what Marie's just said, in that it's seen probably as the fluffy element of business, actually dealing with people, or that's fluffy HR stuff, and actually it's not really, doesn't really contribute to the bottom line. Or even if people do accept that it contributes to the bottom line, it's very difficult with all people investment to measure that return on investment. So whilst if you're having your senior team meeting, you'll talk about sales turnover, profit margin, things like that, it's a bit more difficult to see the difference between the investment you put into people and how that comes out on the bottom line, despite the figures that we've talked about earlier that clearly demonstrate that it does have an impact to the bottom line. In terms of the people side of things, quite often you're seen at preventing and firefighting, actually, but actually if you put the time and effort and investment into the people, it's not about firefighting, it's the added value that they bring as a result of that.
Okay, great. So that's a really interesting perspective. Now, we're going to throw this open to our audience to ask some questions in a few minutes. But before we do, I want to get some individual detail at a greater level from the individual panellists. So I'm going to pick first on Julie.
Thank you.
And you'd be thrilled. But you won, Office Friendly Solutions won the award at Sheffield Business Awards in recognition of people development and the investment that you make. Now, what is it that you do that's so impressed the judges? What did you put forward to evidence that? What systems, processes do you do?
So I think we had a great story to tell. For the last 2.5 years, we put a lot of time and effort on creating the right culture. We tapped into the local skill base using the kids that were graduating from the Hallam University, There was a particular programme that we wanted to put together to do with marketing, and marketing is very sort of forward-thinking all of the time. And to actually access the type of skill sets that we wanted, it was on our doorstep. The Hallam University, I've got kids graduating all the time. Their skill sets are very up-to-date. You've got raw talent that you can bring into your company, and you can give them the business culture training that you want them to behave and your values sort of instilled in them right from day one. We also tapped into the apprenticeship scheme as well, because there were some lower grade, if you like, roles that we wanted to sort of bring along, and that meant that we could offer the kids that were leaving at 16 and 17 some kind of job-related training-based focus on what they wanted to do. And in some respects, give them an idea of what work's like, work in the different departments, as to decide what they could see their strengths being, so that they could analyse, did they want to be in marketing, did they want to be in finance, was it really not for them. We're a small company, and we could actually give that, even with a small company, a little bit of time in each department for them to develop their skills. So I think the local story of tapping into the talent that we got there, we've got a culture and a story where we've got a programme we wanted to bring to fruition, and in 2.5 years we've actually managed that. We did have some help along the way. We tapped into a local consultant, Serenity, or a huge, and that's a nice name check for them, obviously. They mentored us along the way. They gave us access to government funding, where we got some 50-70% of what we wanted to spend funded by the government, and we had some great advice there. And I think that sometimes is the problem, because not all companies get that kind of advice to allow them to see what they can achieve. They don't always have to afford it on their own. There is some money out there, and get some great advice and local advice as well, because I think people don't realise what local advice there is out there.
Well, that's a really interesting perspective, Julie, thank you, and the importance of accessing appropriate advice and expertise, and that there are experts here in the area,
absolutely,
in the region, in the city to do so. So great to hear how you did that, and it gives me the opportunity, I think, to turn to Noreen, if I may, because we were talking before we started broadcasting about the availability of expertise here in the city and in the city region. And of course, as we introduced you at the start of the segment today, winner of Business Person of the Year at the Business Awards, and former Finance Director, of course, at President Engineering Group. So, what are you doing now?
Oh,
interesting. What are you planning to do in the region?
Obviously, we sold the business, which left me in a different position. And I saw my job over the 18 months to integrate President Engineering Group into Park Arnafin, who acquired the business last July. But what I actually have learnt through the process in the last 5 years is, you know, it is a lot about culture and developing businesses through the right methods and things like that. And I actually want to get back. There's a lot of businesses in Sheffield that have got opportunities to develop and to grow, and I want to use my expertise and the things that we've learnt and how we develop to actually help these businesses support the bigger businesses in Sheffield. So, you know, the ones that probably have not actually got all the skill sets, or, you know, like Julie's just said, they haven't got the ability to be able to link in with other people and network and learn all these things, it's not about what you know, it's who you know sometimes, and you've got to find how you can get that ability just to think about things differently, just to look at things differently and grow that. And that's what I want to do, is to help these businesses that recognise their own values and what they can actually do, and the great people that they've got working for them that are probably not, you know, pushed to do what they're capable of doing.
Indeed. Okay, great. And I'm really interested in the process that a company goes through when an MBO happens, and how that might affect the culture and the ability to engage and motivate employees, and perhaps you can elaborate a bit more about what happened.
It was my biggest fear, to be fair, because you go through an MBO process and it's all secret, and you know you're trying to run two jobs and plan for the future. And I think one of the worst things is, how are people going to actually accept that? What is the reaction going to be? And I think it depends what the business was like before. I mean, the business was pretty good. It was making profit. It had turned around, but it had been through its problems. You know, it had had different owners over the years. There had been a lot of people that had seen that and were quite sceptical. But I think what we did is we looked at it and said, okay, you know, this is now ours. What can we do to make it different? And I was in a team of three. And I'm not a feminist, I don't want to say that, but as a woman, you do think differently. You probably are a little bit more compassionate to people's situations. And I'd worked with some of the people, and you knew what they were like and how they did. So we just expanded on that and just took that to the next level and said, okay, we can control things, we can help you do different things, and we have the ability to change. And we just grew on that. So as things happened, we just evolved, and we did things that actually brought people together. Because we were a manufacturing environment as well, we always had the office and shop floor, so there were always the historic us and them scenarios. You know, you've got your white-collar workers and your shop floor. And one of the things that I really, really didn't want is that divide. You know, we were a team. Everybody played a part in the business. And I think that was the first thing I started to break down the barriers, is, you know, we will work together. And to start with, you to force people to do it. But I think once they realise that, you know, some of the office workers weren't as bad as I thought they were, and they were actually there to help each other. And, you know, we actually grew really quite quickly on the basis that people started working together. They understood what each other did. You know, they actually wanted to help each other. You know, we run a few social events where they interacted. And I think that really did help impact quickly, you know, the team effort, the team working. And when it came down to actually needing people to work and the business capacity issues, people are more inclined to actually say, well, I'll come in and help, and I'll do that little bit extra, which obviously impacts on your bottom line, because they are actually more inclined to feel valued and do what they're...
So it has a huge positive impact, of course.
Absolutely.
And that's really interesting in terms of that approach to breaking down silos between departments and teams, and helping people to work together, whatever parts of the business they work in.
It's about achieving the best for the business, you know, and, you know, whatever that is. Some people have to accept that other people have got different skills and, you know, different contacts or things that can actually benefit quicker. But it's recognising everybody's individual skills and how you can actually take them and develop them to be what the business needs. It's not about fighting against each other. It's not about being in competition with each other. It's about recognising what your strengths and weaknesses are, and then what they can do to actually take the business forward. And if you can do that as a leader... And so, right, okay, you know, sometimes it might be not what they want to do, but at the end of the day, you've got to actually say, you know, I think you're better at that. Sometimes they don't actually know they're better at it. Sometimes you've got to give them a chance. Pushing people outside the comfort zone is never what they're like. I mean, we've all been there. I've been pushed outside my comfort zone hell of a lot. But, you know, we've had this conversation already today. It makes you stronger. You know, it develops you. You actually realise it. Oh, I can do that. So next time you do a little bit more. And, you know, you do that with yourself. So you need to do that with your staff. You know, and if you do that, I mean, there were one guy that really not lacking in confidence. You know, he didn't talk to people. He was really good at what he did, but he didn't push himself outside there because he was nervous.
Yes.
And I put him on a basic management leadership course as up-and-coming leaders type of thing. And he actually stood up in front of 15 people in the business and did a presentation at the end of it. You know, and I saw him on the shop floor afterwards, and I said, well done, you. And the beam on his face was unbelievable, because nobody had ever gave him that opportunity. And he didn't think he could do it, but the support people that he had around him, you know, in his team, that supported him to do it, he was so pleased with himself. And that changed the way then he worked. You know, he came on social events, he spoke to a lot more people than he did, he interacted, and that benefited the department he worked in, because he just came out of his shell. But he wouldn't have had that opportunity, or he wouldn't have done that, if you hadn't have pushed him. And, you know, it's just giving people that opportunity.
So giving people an opportunity, allowing people to operate outside of their comfort zone, and then going back to something you said before that as well, as a leader, recognising your own strengths, but also your own weaknesses, and giving other people in the business who are better at you than doing something
it was the best responsibility. Absolutely, yeah. It was the best piece of advice I was ever given at a networking event, because, you know, going straight into an MBO, you know, you don't know what you're doing, to be fair. You dropped into the deep end, and you have to listen to other people. And I think he said to me, he says, you know, you will always have somebody that is better than you at doing something, and it's recognising that they are better than you, and your skill set is your skill set, but their skill set is that. And it's not thinking you are the best at everything, it's finding out who is the best at everything in your business. And I've took that forward, and once you realise that you are not, you know, Superman, and you don't have to do everything. You find out that the people beneath you are actually amazing, and they're the ones that take the business forward, and then you sit back and recognise that.
You recognise that, indeed. That's great. Well, thanks for that, Marie. And we focus on a couple of individual panel members here, and we're going to focus also on Anne and on Neil in a moment or two. But I have another question for all of the panel before we do that. And I also want to remind our audience here today that if you have a question, I'm going to take audience questions. So anyone who wants to ask anything, just pop your hand up like that and I'll make sure you get an opportunity to ask it. Mm-hmm. And so we'll bring in a couple of audience questions just in a moment or two. So before we do that, we're broadcasting this this session as a MADE Festival Fringe event. And any listeners who went to the MADE Festival on Tuesday, the 8th of November, at the Crucible, and anyone on the panel or in the audience here today at Electric Works, might have heard Steve Bartlett, and he runs a business called Social Chain. One thing he talked about was, oh, well, you know, we'll let staff go on holidays whenever they like. It sounded like what some people might describe as a lackadaisical approach, but of course it wasn't. It was a very clever approach in terms of culture. Now, I'd like to ask all of our panel about specific ways to motivate and engage their teams. So in terms of things like staff away days, motivation and culture, and the difference between carrot and stick, we've heard from Steve Bartlett at the MADE Festival. What other innovative things are companies doing sort of on an ongoing basis in terms of rewards, enjoyment, fun in the workplace, if you like, but harnessing that? And I'll start, if I may, with Neil.
Okay, I think one of the things that a lot of workplaces like to do and do is also link the resource that they have to doing some good in the community as well, and have a community programme. I think that gives people also a sense of purpose that they can associate with the workplace that's beyond making profit as well and doing some good.
Yes.
I think if they can see that they're putting back something into their community and it's something that actually is something that's dear to them as an individual, and the company's helping them to do that, then that buys goodwill in spades. So a community programme is one of the good things you can get motivation and engagement from.
I'm really glad that you've mentioned that, Neil, as well. And I know that in your time at Kettle Foods, you were the recipient of another award. We're talking about lots of awards today, the Food and Drink Federation Award for a community programme. What did you do in that programme?
That's right, and it was a true programme in the sense that it wasn't a specific project. There wasn't one outstanding single project that we did. It was a programme and the way we organised the community response with Kettle Foods. So again, as I said about ensuring that you reflect the community in which you draw your employees from, we had this programme called Kettle Cares, and basically it was very simple. It was a form that was available to everybody, and if anybody had a passion and a community or a charity that they wanted to support, they put a note on this form, submitted it into the company. We reviewed all of those forms, spoke to the person that submitted the form, found out the contact person was to do with the charity in the community, and we helped every single one that was put in. Sometimes very small, it would just be offering a raffle prize for a box of crisps or something like that, but we were able to offer something to every single applicant. And again, like I said, that gets goodwill in spades.
Okay, great. So goodwill, community engagement, community involvement, CSR. And interestingly, I think that's reflected more and more in society and in business. I was talking recently with a partner at a management consultancy and accounting firm, one of the big ones in the world with over 200,000 employees worldwide. And that person told me that, of course, over half of their employees now are millennials, and millennials expect different things of the businesses they want to go to work for, whether they're huge global businesses like that one or whether they're small local businesses. They expect different things, and if you want to attract and then retain the best talent, then you as a business need to be about more than simple profit. You need to be engaged and involved in community activity. Now, I want to bring that question over to you now, if I may, Anne. We've gone from the question into the area of community engagement, CSR, community involvement. Now, that's something that you've seen a great deal of, you're well aware of. Can you tell me perhaps a little bit more?
Yes, certainly. I mean, a lot of people think of CSR as just giving money. But for me, in my business, it's about giving time, about lifelong learning and sharing your experiences, as well as looking after, obviously, our own staff. So for me, my engagement outside of the company, as apart from my own lifelong learning, which stretches sort of, I've just done the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Businesses course, which is phenomenal. I'd recommend that to anyone. But giving something back and engaging in education is important to me. So I'm taking up a governor position to primary school. I'm Cutler's champion for one of our secondary schools, enterprise advisor, governor at Sheffield College, and I've just joined the board of Barnsley and Rotherham Chambers, non-exec director. It's important to me to know what's going on out there, and particularly with education, to know what's happening at five, and what's going in at the back end, to know what we're going to get out at the front end in 11 years' time, 13 years' time, years at 15 years' time, whatever path those students decide to do. So CSR to me is a lot of different things, and how we can engage. I mean, as a company, we support Hillsborough Pumas football through one of our employees. We started doing that about 4 years ago, and we're just now helping with sponsorship with, I think it's the under-sevens, a new team. So that's sort of... important to us as well, to make sure that we're engaging in the local community.
Yes.
And we're based in Sheffield 6, so it makes perfect sense to be able to help those people that we may want to draw on as our employees in future years. For talent, we grow our own, so we actually bring in apprentices. We're just about to employ another young man, and that's also important to us. So, but my own sort of lifelong learning is wrapped around education, it's wrapped around engineering, it's wrapped around manufacturing, to see what is going to happen and try and have some input into that in the next few years.
Right, great. And again, I'm really glad that you've mentioned that, because when we focus on your business in a moment or two, I'd like to unpick that even more and in some more detail. I've got some questions about education as well. So, fantastic. Thanks for that, Anne. Julie, now, the original question, we've gone into community engagement and CSR. The original question was about what companies can and should do beyond the sort of simple old methods of if you like, motivation and creating either fun or a motivational environment. You can address that, or you can be specific about community engagement and CSR if you'd like to.
So I think Steve Bartlett's original presentation, that's always fantastic. I think he shows the extreme version of solution-focused working.
Yes.
So the old-fashioned days of, I'm calling them old-fashioned because they still operate now, of turning up at 9 and going at home at 5, and you do your disciplines during that day. The culture is very much going towards more solution-focused, where you're given a deadline for a job, how you achieve that job, the journey that you go on, whether you do it from home, do it from work, the hours that you keep. It fits around people's lifestyles, and I think that's what he was trying to get at, although his example was the very extreme of take as many holidays as you like, but I got the message. Whether most people did in the holidays, I don't know. Mm. Our company does... the main discipline of 9 while 5 with a way towards solution focused, very flexible on the 9 till 5. so that if people need time out to finish a project, they can do it from home, they can be out on the road, they can work from a cafe, they can take the time off, but they know what their deadline is. So our company's going more towards that in any case. I think it's easier, again, to do if it's a small company. I think it's harder to do when you've got disciplines of manufacturing and processing, but I think there's other ways that in a company like that, you're probably giving things back to a company. One or two other things we've tried to do to engage the fund and what have you, there is always somebody that's got a charity or trying to support somebody in the room if they're doing something that's close to the heart. We have a young chap in the office who writes his amateur dramatics. He's going to be in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert at the Crucible in March. We're all going there to support him. We've got other things on a more work-related basis that on every month everybody votes for who they've enjoyed working with the most or who's gone over and beyond, who've recognised the fact that they've worked alongside someone that's done something really good that month. And they're recognised in an email out to everybody, and each quarter there's a certificate and, you know, some kind of reward. And then at the end of the year we have a kick-off meeting, and it's a presentation of the business, and then there's some team building and a meal afterwards that actually kicks us off for the next year going forward. And the person who has developed the best during the year gets the award for the year, and everybody sort of joins in that and is quite celebratory with it. And it actually highlights the type of things that people are doing and the type of things that people are being recognised for. And some of them are just kindness, how they've spoken to someone, how they've helped somebody out. And the nuances, if you've worked with somebody during that month, how they will vote for one another as much as the big projects that are going off in the team. So that really welds the team together very well.
So great, really interesting examples there, Julie. Thank you. And I'll turn then now to Maria on the same question. The same two questions, if you like, in terms of how you want to answer.
Yeah, I don't think you need to do a lot of expensive days out. You don't need to take people out of the business. I think it's the little things that count. People recognise the things want to be done. Most people just want to come in and do a good job, get paid for what they do. And interaction and all the fun bits are the things that come extra, you know. So as soon as you get that, and we've done all the same things, you know, we've done charity events, we've done things, and as you know, people have baked pies for the St. Luke's Pie and Peas event, and it brings people together. It's sometimes you think you're doing something for charity, but you're actually impacting everybody in the business, because actually having 60 people then coming through the canteen all talking to each other, eating pie and peas, and it just actually gets people together, whereas they wouldn't normally be together in sat at the desk and at the machines on the shop floor. And you know, we've done things like that, but it's recognising that the business needs to do well as well, so that you can afford to do all the things that you want to do for them. You can give them the bonuses and, you know, the actually pay for them and run the business, and, you know, even just sometimes down to painting the shop floor, you know, the impact that actually made, because it made people think, oh, now it's a nice clean environment, they look after the workplaces. It's not just about giving them money, it's making them feel like they're working in a place that's had got investment, it's that people actually care. And the charity events are fine, and you know, we all have done that, and we've recognised people in the business that we've had a lot of issues, you know, with people who have been through cancer scares and things, and they are close to people's hearts, and you actually recognise that by getting a team of people in the business to support them. And you know, we raise money for the charities, we change the charities that we work for that's related to what people have been through in the lives that are close and caring to them. But to make it fun, I mean, we get a lot of gifts at Christmas. People tend to be nice, the suppliers and the customers. And rather than them all going to the purchasing department, which is what normally happens, you know, I force the issue and bring them all into the middle of the office. Company added a few nice gifts. We bought a couple of iPads, things like that. And we sold the raffle tickets. And I actually thought, if we get a few £100, we'll do well. And because of what we did and the fun bit, and we got everybody in the office together, we raised over £1,000 just for a tombola, you know, of people having the events. But what actually happened is that escalated, and people started bringing gifts in to raffle off in this tombola. Daft things like, you know, tin openers or dustbins. They actually thought it was highly hilarious that, yes, somebody would get a raffle ticket. They'd go to a tombola and they'd, who's going to get the... But it, to me, you know, raising the money for the charity was the second part,
yes,
of that.
Indeed.
The actual interaction that brought for an hour, one lunchtime near Christmas, that everybody had the fun event and they walked away with something. You know, it was just that. And I stood back one year and actually went, this is what it's all about, you know, because then they all went back to the workstations and, you know, we hit as targets for the year end and everybody closed down at Christmas and you got that team effort, and to me, that's when we knew we'd succeeded.
Absolutely, so that brought everyone together, that facilitated that. That's great, thank you. So I know we have some questions that members of the audience want to ask. So what I'd like to do is throw this open, and I think, Jay, you have a first question. I'm going to remind our audience members to introduce yourself when you ask your question.
Thanks, Jamie. I'm Jay Bayani. I'm a solicitor and managing director of Bayani HR and Employment Law, a niche law firm specialising in employment law. Really fascinating listening to you all, but my question is that is it a coincidence that the three business leaders on the panel who have been instrumental in creating a fantastic work culture are women, or is it that women are just much better at it than men?
I think what we need to recognise is that it's not necessarily that we're women, it's the fact that you've got to have a certain a skill set, and it's the skill set you need to develop. It doesn't matter whether you're male, female, black, white or green. If you've got the right skill set to do a job, then that to me is the important thing, to put people in the right places, as Marie said earlier, to develop them, to give them the confidence to step out of a comfort zone. We were talking earlier before the broadcast about the empathy that maybe you do get more from some female leaders, and I know that's not necessarily across the board. I've heard some horrific stories about, you know, some dogmatic female leaders that have maybe not had the correct approach to the workforce and their own job. But for me, I think, yes, it is important to be empathetic. It is important to know and understand the people around you. And the two words, really, that I was thinking about when we've been talking about CSR and giving something back, the two most important words for me to give to my workforce every day is thank you. If they do something for me, it's thank you. My admin lady, when she goes out at 2:30 in the afternoon, as it, thank you. Every day that I see her, and I think that's important. Now, whether that's a female thing, I don't know.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Anne. And I'm going to move to Julie, if I may.
I actually could turn the question on you, Jamie, because I mean you did the invitations. There is also another common denominator, the three of us as well, that we're all a finance background as well. So, you know, I don't think we were selected for the finance, and probably not selected for the, you know, the gender either. My own personal experience is my team, unusually in our industry, is three women directors. We sit on with the rest of the board, which are all men. Our industry, which is office products, is very male dominated, so we are very unusual in our industry. But I think all my working life, from an accountancy background, I have worked, you know, in a male-orientated sort of industry. But I have come across both good and bad on both genders, and I think you recognise the personality rather than the gender on that for me.
Okay, super. Well, thanks very much for that, Julie. And I'll turn now to Marie for now.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've both touched on exactly what I think. It's down to skill set, it's down to understanding. And I was part of a team three that run our business, and both the others were guys. And even though they knew all the stuff that I was saying, they didn't actually really apply it to the finances, you know. And I'll touch on what Julie said about us being finance people. You know, people say that finance people make bad business managers because everything's run by numbers, but everything is run by numbers, you know, and I think you've got to understand the impact of what you're actually doing in your business on the numbers. You know, one of the things that, you know, the three of us, we worked well together, we had a mix of our skill sets, and we all came at it from a different angle. And I think everybody gets to understand what your manager's skill sets are. And yes, I did probably show the most empathy, but I was supported by John and Mark in doing that as well, you know. If I went to them and said, look, we've got a problem with this, they actually supported it. But I think they felt like they couldn't actually go and have that conversation with people. So I don't know if it is something about being female that you are probably seen to be the most compassionate. But it's not actually the case. I think it's just how are you seen and what you actually do and come across. And I've never looked at it like that. I've always done what's the right thing. How would I want to be treated? You know, and if you can see that, you know, I mean, I've been in jobs, I've had managers that's not been sympathetic or empathetic to situations, and all it does is it gets you back up and it creates an issue, and that don't get the best out of people. You know, if you just see the best in people and you support them, then you do get the best, and it impacts on the business and it impacts on the finances. And I think you've just got to get that, you know, whether you are female or male. I mean, I've talked to a lot of different guys about this conversation, and they all see it and they get it. So it's again, it's down to skill set. Some people won't get it, and some people don't see it as being the most important thing. But you've got to find somebody in your business that does. And the people that don't see it, they've got a skill set that you need in your business, but it's just not people management. You know, they're probably really good at working on their own, but you don't put them in charge of people. You find the people that can actually associate and get the best out of people as your managers. And again, it's back down to recognising the skills.
Actually, just say, Marie, there is that what I tend to find with women is that they will do a communal decision. A man is quite happy to take a decision on his own, and that is very much down to how male and female people operate. So you will find the woman actually going out and consulting a lot before she actually makes the decision, and that brings about a community aspect. Whereas the men are quite happy to stand on their own sort of decision, whether it's right or wrong, and you know, whether that's a traditional thing and it's changing, I don't know. But there were quite a few presenters on the Tuesday that were male, with the things that they'd instilled in their company were very much the kind of things that a woman would do as well. So I think it's a team thing, and I think a blend of the both is really good. Personalities are really important.
Yeah,
great. Okay, so that's again really interesting, Julie and Marie there again, and too. And we're talking skill set, we're talking personality as well. Neil, what's your view on that?
It's the token male and the token person, not from finance, from HR. Yeah. Yes. A couple of things that sprung to mind, really. I have to take issue with your point about men are always more likely to be willing to go out and make a decision and stand on their own. My approach is very much more consensual, and I deliberate quite a lot before I'm prepared to go out and make a decision. I like to take in views. Mm-hmm. But then I may be different. I don't think it is a coincidence that we've got three females on the panel. I'd like to think it's a reflection of our times, and maybe we've broken through some of that glass ceiling, and actually people now can just aspire to holding senior director board positions, whether as a female. I mean, I don't want to sound patronising, but then a report just last week, if we look at the FTSE 250, we're still very much underrepresented in terms of diversity on our boards. But hopefully, you know, a reflection of our times that it is the skills that matter and not the gender.
It's the confidence thing as well, I think, it's actually putting yourself out there. I mean, I touched on earlier about people actually putting themselves outside their comfort zones and having a go. You know, when I started, you know, first female in manufacturing, you know, in this position, I've been stood in rooms where I am the only woman. You know, and sometimes you don't actually realise it until somebody actually says, you do realise, and then you look around and you think, oh yeah. But it's not about that. It's about you there because of what you do, what you have done, and what you're prepared to do. You know, and women need to actually recognise that. And I think that's one thing that even some guys don't do, is recognise their own abilities and their own confidences to go and do it.
Okay.
Role models.
Yeah, different models indeed. Okay, thanks for that. That's really interesting. So I'd like to remind the audience that if anyone would like to ask a question, please pop your hand up. And yes, we have another question, and please also introduce yourself.
Okay, so I'm Amanda Cookson, and I work for Northern Value Creators, which is a new business helping companies in the north develop value from their people. I work with a lot of digital and technical companies who are employing millennials, and I'm really interested in your view about whether you need to work differently to motivate your younger employees than you do your older employees, because there's a lot of talk out there at the moment, and I wonder, we've just had a discussion about gender and whether that makes a difference, and what's your view about age?
And now this time we're going to start with you, Neil.
All the research suggests that, yes, there is a difference by the way that millennials are so much more tech savvy and communicate differently in terms of the digitally. and they're much more collaborative and all these things. So if you look at all the research, it says these millennials are a different species to what's gone before them. However, my view is, yes, I accept that, but that is only one aspect of their characteristic. We're all people at the end of the day, and we all have that need, I feel, to be recognised. And if we're talking about engagement, I think recognition and having a voice are two of the key things, and that applies across the generations.
Okay, thank you for that. And can I turn next to the room?
I think, again, it's a balance, because the old and the new, I always see, is working together. Bringing new apprentices into our business changed the culture of the old school methods and old school terminology. It made the guys that had been there for 25 to 40 years plus think differently, because you've got the why, you know, you've got the new energy of the kids coming in and saying, why do you do that, and questioning it. And that made the guys think, well, actually, why do I do that? So you've got the old experience with a new enthusiasm and energy and new ideas. And to me, if you bring the two together, I'm not saying it's easy, but if you bring the two together, you actually bring a more solid, stronger skill set to go forward with.
Super. Thanks for that, Marie. And Julie, any views and comments?
Same with Marie, really. I mean, we have a mixture. We have the young kids, like I said, from university. I've got some seasoned professionals in there as well. I think the enthusiasm of the youngsters and the fact that their attention span can be less so than the old people, and also the fact that you tend to find the older ones tidying up after the younger ones, and the younger ones will run the legs off for the older ones, and you know, we have a blend of the both, which really knit very well. The new skill sets are brought in from both ends. You know, the seasoned professionals will sort of show them the rounded way of working. I think the youngsters will actually show the older ones the new tech savvy way of doing stuff, and we have a fantastic environment within our 20.
Super, thank you. And Anne?
Yes, similar to Marie, obviously in a traditional industry, we had a tremendous amount of experience, and I really worried about bringing apprentices into the business sort of 5-6 years ago. Because of the pastoral care of those young people and how they would react to being in such an old traditional business. But over the years, no, I need to worry. The older generation actually nurtured very well the young ones, and it was actually described to me as them having a whole set of new dads and granddads to help them along. And now that we have shipped out probably 150 plus years of experience, because the new guard is now ready to take over, and it's actually made a tremendous difference to the business. But always respect to the more experienced people. They passed on their skills, they were happy to do it, and the business will be better for it in the future. But sometimes it's a very tough road to tread.
Can I just come in, Jamie? There's also a concept now that's being talked about in business called reverse mentoring. And so instead of the older generation passing down information to the new younger people, it's actually the other way. So, you know, the younger generation are the tech savvy people, and so they're mentoring the older generation, so those people at board level that perhaps don't get it in the way of digital communications, in the way of the millennial.
That's great. Thanks for that, Neil and Amanda. Perhaps you want to reflect, is there anything you'd like to comment on in terms of what the panel has said in answer to your question?
I guess I'm particularly interested in motivation in itself, but I think whenever you judge anybody by their label, whether it's female or age, I don't think you see the whole person. So I'm really heartened actually by the answers by the panel.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. Now, I'm going to focus very briefly, Anne, on your business, New Mill Engineering. You described yourself as just an ordinary person from the manor doing ordinary things. What you see is what you get with me and Anne Wilson, but you've been awarded the MBE for your services to the engineering industry and in recognition of commitment to training and developing your employees and apprenticeships, but meaningful apprenticeships that actually make a difference, not tick-box apprenticeships, which I'm afraid we do see in many companies. So I'd just like to ask you about education and whether education in schools prepares people very well for the workplace, and about how you at New Mill have taken an approach to apprenticeships that are meaningful. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to answer it in 2 minutes, though.
Okay, as we've already alluded to, apprenticeships are important to the business. We do need to grow our own talent. We need to nurture those young people through the process. In the wider aspect, I'm very involved in education. I've already mentioned right through from primary school governance right through to Sheffield College, and being involved in every sector in between as an enterprise advisor and also a Couplers champion as part of my role as freeman of the company of Couplers in Hallamshire, which I'm very proud to be. Education is so important. The schools are under such a lot of pressure to hit targets, and for me, my personal soapbox is that until we have parity between vocational qualifications and academic qualifications, we will always have an underdeveloped element of students in school, because they are both vital to our future, that we have vocational talent, whether that's a gifted and talented student that doesn't want to go to university, that wants to take up a vocational role, they should be supported in that. And that really is my personal soapbox. Vocational skills are as important as academia for the growth of the economy and our region and the whole country.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much indeed for that, Anne. Now, we're going to be concluding very shortly, but I've got several questions that I really wanted to ask the panel. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put three questions up in the air, and I'm going to ask each panellist in turn to answer one of them. You can choose the question you ask. If someone else has answered the same question, you can still answer it and give your perspective. It just means that we'll get these questions out there and see if we can get some of them answered. First of all, technology. Now, does technology empower employee engagement, or does it actually encroach on employees? And it's really interesting to hear about how in France there's been a proposal for a law to stop people using work emails in the evening or at weekends. So technology, are companies using it responsibly? Does it help, does it empower, or does it encroach on your employees? Second question that panellists might choose to answer is about culture. So is it easier in different types of business, whether manufacturing or engineering or the service sector, to have a culture with engaged employees? I mean, we all have a picture in our mind, don't we, of the sort of creative digital advertising marketing agency, which is full of pool tables and so on. Is that actually a good thing? But anyway, culture. Is it easier in different types of business? And I suppose the third question that you have the opportunity to answer is about inward investment. So if you as a business in the Sheffield City region are attracting investment from overseas, perhaps from China, perhaps from America, perhaps from elsewhere, does that affect your ability as a business to have an engaged and to empower your workforce? So three questions there. Now, I'm going to have to remind panel to answer only one of them each and to do it in about 30 seconds. Julie, I think it's your turn to get the first, if you like.
Okay, go for it. I'll go for the middle question, which is about culture and different. I think if you look at the panel, we're all from different backgrounds, engineering. Mine's not engineering, mine's service providers. And I think a lot of it is to do with, once again, the people involved, the people who own the business, who run the business, the kind of culture. I have a small team, the manufacturing side is a small team, but probably a different process again. And I think very much to do with the culture you want to create. There's no reason why you cannot do it. I think you take on like-minded people, I think you work with like-minded people, and the culture therefore becomes what you've wanted it to be.
Okay, super. We're going to turn to you, Marie.
Okay, I'm going to pick on culture, but I am going to have to the technology bit, because I think they're linked. And I think, you know, you're right, Julie, that the culture is what you create, you know, and it's what you expect your employees to do. So the technical you know, aspect actually allows you now, with the technology we've got, to be worldwide. You can access anywhere. So companies do put that out there, but it's the expectation of what the culture is in your business as to what you expect your employees to do. If you expect them to answer emails at 11 o'clock at night, what sort of culture are you actually creating? You know, if your employees want to do it because it's what they're doing, it's the nature of the job, and you're prepared to be flexible with them, again, I think they're linked. I think it's what culture do you create, and, you know, what culture is your business. And I've always said this about a couple of people when I've had meetings with them, is to sometimes, you know, you fit businesses. You know, I think it's a two-way street, isn't it? You get people who want to work for your business, but you also get people who want to work for you as well. And if it doesn't fit, you go and find one that does fit. You know, and I think that's what it's about as well, is recognising that you're in the right business for you, for your personality, for your skills, for the culture that you want to work in, and the expectations of you as a person. If you do that, I think you get the happy medium between both. You're happy as an employee, the company's happy, and they get the prospects.
And you get that happy medium. Super. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed, Marie. Yeah.
I think I'm going to jump on Marie's bandwagon about connecting the two. I mean, what I choose to do, and the number of hours I choose to work, is down to me personally, but I'm always mindful of sending emails to my people. So if something comes in over the weekend or after the working hours, I will schedule it to go out at 7 o'clock the next morning so that they get it as soon as they're ready at work, but not before, and I'm not encroaching on their work-life balance. And in Newmill, one of the things that we've actually done, we've spoken to the team, and our team now work 38 hours over 4 days. So every week they have a 3-day weekend, which has made a tremendous difference to them. So they work a little bit longer over Monday to Thursday, but they have a 3-day weekend. Commercially, it's also pretty good for us, because if we do need them to engage, as they are today, we can get them in on a Friday. They can work as a full 9.5-hour shift, and they still have a 2-day weekend. That balance is important to me, as it is for them, that they have time with the families.
Balance again there. Balance. Thank you very much indeed, Anne.
Yeah, I'll go with a culture question as well, if I may.
Yep. That's a popular one.
I think I agree with the other panellist in terms of, you know, this overriding culture that you need to put in and fitting cultures, but I also do think that actually there are some difficulties in certain organisations, depending on the size and different types of functions that you will have within that organisation. So Marie, earlier you talked about the difference between office and factory floor, and that's something that certainly I've come across before, and actually you can give different freedoms to people that work in the office to work flexibly, perhaps to work from home, which you can't give to people that are required to be on a production line. And so therefore things like that actually do stand out and do create a little bit of problem with creating a cohesive culture that you have to somehow overcome with a bigger field.
Communication's key to that.
Yeah.
Communication indeed. Super. I need to thank our panellists and our audience today, and of course our listeners. Thank you so much, of course, for joining me today. Anne Wilson, Newmill Engineering. Marie Cooper, who has been running the President Engineering Group and former Business Person of the Year. Julie Hawley, Office Friendly Solutions, and Neil Lohman of Evolved Workplace. Thanks to you all. Thanks to our audience too. A round of applause for each of you.